And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 185. Coming at you, as always, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris, and we are going to shift gears rather dramatically this week. But before we do that, I actually wanted to do a couple of quick shout-outs here. First is to the newest member of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. That is Mr. C. Scott Baker. Welcome along, Scott, to the show. It's always great to have new people joining the Facebook group, as indeed you can do if you're not already a member. You can come join us over on Facebook. Just look for Radio Free Asgard over there, and you will find us. And another quick shout-out to our new follower over on Podbean. Now, I don't really talk about this because there's not very many followers over on Podbean, but over on Podbean, which is our main podcasting host, you can actually get, you know, friends and followers and that kind of thing over there. And Lost Nixia has become the latest follower of Radio Free Asgard over there. You know, I don't really talk about them very much because I don't know who they are. They don't typically identify themselves, and so I just kind of know a name and that's all. But I'm going to start shouting them out as I notice them because, you know, hey, let's encourage people. If you're already on Podbean and you wanted to follow us, please feel free to do so. Just look for Radio Free Asgard and you'll find us there as well. And before we get started, I do just have one more thing. Now, as you know, we're doing this Lee Kirby episode coming up, the retrospective, what Lee Kirby's run means to us. Now, if you'd like to participate, we'd really appreciate if you would get in contact with us. You can send us email, you can do a voice file, you can do an interpretive dance, as long as, you know, there's some way that we can communicate that to our listeners, so it needs to be audio, at least in nature. The episode that we're going to be doing the Lee Kirby retrospective is going to be episode number 190. So that is going to be five episodes away from now. And so if you want to participate, just let us know. And, let us know what you think. And you'll be happy to read that out on the show or play it out on the show, however you would like. All right. So those of you who have been watching the Facebook or probably noticed a mysterious message from me the other day. Beware the Ides of March. And yes, and that is because we are going to be veering off in a vastly different direction for the next 4 weeks and covering a series that I've been wanting to cover and I've been talking about covering since the very beginning of Radio Free Asgard, all the way back in 2011, I believe it was, that we started. Was it 2011? I think that's true. Yes, indeed, folks. This week, and for the next 4 weeks, we are going to be covering a Marvel Comics limited series from 1982, Hercules, Prince of Power.
Hercules, hero of song and story, Hercules, winner of ancient glory, fighting for the right. Fighting with his might, with the strength of 10 ordinary men. Hercules, people are safe when near him. Hercules, only the evil fear him. Softness in his eyes, iron in his thighs, virtue in his heart, fire in every part of the mighty Hercules.
Indeed. Thank you, Johnny Mercer, for that lovely introduction. So we've been talking about covering this series for a long time, and we're finally getting around to it. And I have to admit to a bit of trepidation going into this, because this is one of those definitive series that, you know, everybody remembers so fondly, and it's hard to do it justice. And there's so much to like about this series. There's a lot to look at in this series. There's little sight gags here and there. And those are the kinds of things that are sometimes hard to summarize when you're actually talking about an issue, much less act out with a lot of things going on in panels. I'm going to do my best, folks. It's going to be hard, but I'm definitely going to do my best. You know, this is one of those series that I bought off the rack. This is one of those, you know, I'm reading from the original issues, paper copy here, and definitely is going to be a lot of fun to revisit this. I haven't actually gone back and reread these, but I think I went back and reread them about 10 years ago or so. So we'll see how good my memory is. And I think you're going to be surprised at some of the stuff in here. And I think you're going to find that there are some things in here that were freely borrowed by other writers in writing Thor comics. And maybe we'll point these out as we get to them. Anyway, so we are starting out Hercules Prince of Power number one. At a cover price of 60 cents. Cover date is September of 1982. Cover is by Bob Layton. Shows Hercules, and he's standing on some sort of alien planet, and there's these soldiers in these really garish gray and pink costumes, and there's spaceships like coming down from above, and they're shooting rays at him, and he's standing there with his club in one hand and looking like he's ready for a scrap. In the background, we see our old friend, the Recorder. Remember him back from the Ego, the Living Planet stories here that we've covered on the show. And yes, and let's just open up to the splash page. And we have an ad for Cracker Jack on the inside cover featuring Hank Aaron. Though oddly enough, they don't actually draw attention to that. You actually have to read the comics, a little comic strip here, to know that that's actually Hank Aaron that's making an appearance in this Cracker Jack ad. But anyway, we have the splash page here, and we have the title of the story, Stan Lee Presents What Fools These Immortals Be, conceived and executed by Bob Layton, who's the writer and the artist. So he not only did the pencils, he did the inks, and it looks like he didn't do the colors, but anyway, he wrote it, and he drew it, and he inked it. Rick Parker was the letterer. Christy Scheel, Max Scheel, from the Thor book some years later, was the colorist. Mark Grunewald was the editor, and Jim Shooter is the editor-in-chief. The splash page shows our hero, Hercules, climbing his way up Mount Olympus, and Mount Olympus is this giant white sort of ziggurat-looking thing, kind of looks like one of the cooling towers of Three Mile Island or whatever. And there's Kirby Crackle crackling about the top and little wispy clouds and so forth. And we have exposition. There is a mountain no mortal eye can see, a mountain no mortal limbs can climb. It is the timeless home of a race of godlike beings who long ago roamed the earth and dabbled in the affairs of mankind. It is Mount Olympus, home of the immortal gods of ancient Greece. On this day, after years of wandering and adventure upon the world of men, one of their number returns home. He is the son of Zeus, high father of the gods. He is a rogue, a hero, an avenger. Throughout the ages, he has been known as Hercules, Prince of Power. And we have him approaching the top of the mountain and climbing up. And he's talking to himself, as heroes in Marvel Comics often do. Oh, what celebration there shall be when I'll learn that the Lion of Olympus has returned. What joy will fill the hearts of my fellow gods when they see the greatest of their numbers has come home after, so many years. What songs they shall sing to honor me. What in the name of Zeus do you want? And he's trying to pull himself over the edge, and there's this giant orange dude who is got like this weird blonde mohawk sort of thing. And he's going, grrrr, and he's threatening Hercules. Now we see the city of Olympus here, and of course, much like Asgard, it's sort of these somewhat futuristic buildings, though these are more like classical Greece by way of sci-fi looking buildings. The giant is encroaching upon Hercules, and he says, gesture not so menacingly, silent one. Yellow-crested titans are but fodder for the fists of Hercules. Move aside, guardian, to the gates of Olympus, and I shall spare thee. Then again, why should I deny thee the honor of being bested by the Prince of Power? Is not the joy of battle the gift to those of immortal stature? So have at thee, then! And he whams the titan in the face, and doesn't quite take him down the first shot, but the titan is attacking him, and the two of them are tussling a bit. What other way can one test the mettle of another except by combat? There is no greater honor than to be pummeled into the earth by the son of Zeus. Verily, the fates have smiled upon thee this day, defeated one. May this blow be my final gift to thee. And he's got his hand, he's kind of grabbed onto his like mohawk ponytail sort of thing he's got, getting ready to dispatch the giant. And we have suddenly appearing in the scene, spears, like the spears of guards poking in. Cease Olympian, by order of Lord Zeus himself. And the Titan's like, rawr. You have returned on a most solemn occasion, Prince. It is the day of reflective silence, the time in which we honor the birth of Father Zeus. The Golden One sought only to halt thy wagging tongue. Thou must go at once to thy quarters and pay silent homage to thy father. Of course I shall. That is, as soon as this yellow-skinned buffoon gets off my foot. And we can see he's standing on his foot. He's going, rrr. And after a very brief Dungeons & Dragons adventure, we see Hercules wandering silently through the gleaming hills, or the, I hate to call them gleaming spires, but the you know, sci-fi ancient Greek buildings that we have here. Silence returns to Olympus, much to the chagrin of the dejected son of Zeus. And Hercules is thinking to himself, in truth, 'tis a poor homecoming for the Lion of Olympus. Come the morrow, I must show yonder guards a need of proper respect. I shall bestow upon them the gift. Of course, we have some more exposition here. Quizzically scanning the hallways of the palace of his father, Hercules finds not the slightest sign of activity. Dejectedly, he makes his way to the heavy, gold-plated doors of his private chambers. Flinging them open, he surveys the rooms beyond. Immaculately kept, they show no trace of the long years that have passed since last he dwelt therein. And as he slowly stretches out his mighty frame on the silken cushions of his couch, Hercules recalls why he left Olympus in the first place. And he's still thinking to himself, 'Tis boring. My fellow gods have lost their lust for living. There should be music, dance, and feasting to celebrate my glorious return. Perhaps I should. And a voice comes from beyond.
1,000 pardons, my lord. May we enter?
And he looks up. And there are two gorgeous women coming into his quarters. And they, one of them has like a amphora of wine, and the other one has like a plate of fruit.
We are charged to provide refreshment to all who honor Zeus this day. May we offer you thy pleasure?
Indeed, fair maidens, you are welcome guests in the abode of Hercules.
And we shift to some time later, and they have Zeus here sitting on his throne. We get, of course, more captions. There's a lot of exposition here, so I'm just going to read it.
And as night falls on solemn Olympus, the reflective silence that ruled the day is disrupted with a resounding crash!
And the sound effect, crash.
By my sacred throne, who dares violate the meditations of Zeus?
And Zeus gets up, and he's wearing this very Jack Kirby-ish sort of outfit. Not very Greek-looking, but of course very, very kind of ancient Greek by way of Jack Kirby. And in a particularly garish orange and green, I might add.
Drawn by the sounds of revelry, Zeus treads the marble halls, his anger mounting with every stride. But anger is momentarily replaced by dismay as Zeus discovers the source of his indignity is none other than his long-absent son.
And Zeus bursts into the room, and Hercules is lifting up the girls. One of them is sitting on his couch, and he's got the couch over his head, and he's kind of holding on to the one of the other girls with his other arm. And there's another girl on the floor who apparently was naked because she's trying to cover herself with her pink dress. And Hercules is all bashful-like, and he says,
Greetings, father.
Lord Zeus!
Sorry for the clamor, father. It seems the wine jug slipped from the maiden's grasp, and, oh, there's a fourth woman there, too,
and a broken jug on the ground.
We are not amused, says Zeus,
and he's all giant and fiery, and does this big magical explosion sort of thing.
Thou hast violated the will of Zeus. Although thou art my son, thou shalt pay for thy disrespect.
So we then cut to sometime later in the throne room of Zeus. Zeus is confronting Hercules.
From the day thy mortal mother gave birth to thee, thy impudence has grown, until it has now become insufferable. I hereby banish thee from the gates of Olympus till such time as I discern thou hast learned the lesson of true humility.
Does that sound familiar? I thought it might.
I beg forgiveness, High Father. I accept the judgment of Zeus as the word and the way. But I beg to know how long I must dwell on Earth before thy decision is... Earth!
I mention nothing of earth. Upon the world of mortals thou art truly a god to be humbled by none. But yonder in the vastness of the universe among the myriad stars thou art a puny creature.
And he's pointing off into Kirby space, where we have, of course, very Kirby-like moons and planets and so forth.
Father, I... Enough! Thy lord hath spoken. Remove thyself to thy quarters. At dawn stand forth in the courtyard of Zeus to begin thine exile. Aye, Lord Zeus.
And we shift to sometime in the future again. And then we get a caption. And as the sun rises on fabled Mount Olympus, the soon-to-be-exiled Hercules is joined in the spacious courtyard by his age-long friend, Apollo. And Apollo is there with him, and they're just standing in the courtyard. Hercules, why dost thou stand there, arms outstretched thus?
I await the thunderbolts of Zeus to transport me to mine exile.
No, old friend, that will not be the means of transportation. Thy father hath charged me to bestow upon thee my chariot, to carry thee to the stars by its magical powers. Behold, prince, the sun chariot of Apollo. And we see the chariot there, and it's, it's kind of your standard Greek chariot sort of thing. Two white horses, and they're kind of this gold livery.
By the gods, 'tis magnificent indeed, says Hercules. The prince of power is touched by thy sacrifice, Apollo. May I do honor by it.
Worry not. Merely feed the steeds occasionally, and give wide birth to all supernovas. Otherwise, they'll singe thy hair clean off. Fare thee well, son of Zeus. And Apollo goes stalking off, and leaving Hercules there with the chariot. And he's thinking to himself,
and fare thee well, glorious Olympus. I wonder when I shall tread thy hallowed ground again. As well I wonder, what do I feed these beasts? Apollo did not say. Ah, no matter. Ho, valiant steeds, he says, let us be off.
And we see the chariot and the steeds go zooming off. And Hercules, of course, is talking to himself.
The universe is vast, and all its denizens breathlessly await the coming of Hercules. Onward!
Bathed in a miasma of light and color, the enchanted chariot warps out of the dimension of Olympus, out of the Milky Way galaxy itself. So we're going a long way away. We find ourselves in the next page in the Andromeda Galaxy, a swirling cluster of brilliance comprised of over a billion stars within countless civilized worlds revolving around them. And deep within Andromeda's already life-teeming confines, the population suddenly increases by untold millions. From the deep corridors of hyperspace come the colonizers of Rigel, a technologically advanced race of pioneers and imperialists. We know them. Their purpose? To create a vast empire of worlds to span the heavens. Emotionless and methodical, they monitor the galaxy for worlds that suit their needs. They have encountered many wonders in their many millennia of colonization. But not even they are prepared for everything. And so we're on a colonizer ship, and of course we remember these guys from old Thor issues.
Commissioner Rohan, the telescan detects a vehicle coming out of hyperspace in Sector 2F. We are receiving a request for docking procedures.
We hear the voice,
forsooth, I wish to land. Open thy docking bay.
Scansman, decrease the volume of the telescan. It is needlessly loud.
That's the problem, sir. The message is not coming on telescan. It's reverberating throughout the ship.
And we cut to the outside of the ship. We see Hercules, and he has this sort of magical horn. And he's saying,
hail ye! The Prince of Power approaches. By the horn of Zeus through which I speak, open thy docking bay doors.
There it is again, Commissioner. What should we do?
How should I know? Open the bay doors and let's see what it is.
And they open the doors, and Hercules comes swooping in the chariot with his two horses.
Hercules bids thee greetings, wayfarers. Salutations from the son of mighty Zeus.
And there's these Rigelian workers in there, and they're like, devils from space! Run, Weepo!
Please don't devour us!
The chariot lands, and the Rigelians are really small here. Were they always small? I don't remember them being, and they're not, like, hugely tall. They've got the big heads. Now, these are the like, 1970s-style Rigelians, and their heads aren't nearly as large as they were back in the Jack Kirby days. Or else maybe their heads have just shrunk in the, thousands of years that Hercules has been on Earth. I don't know.
I give thee thanks for thy hospitality. My sojourn has been long and wearisome.
Greetings to you, Hercules. I am Subcommissioner Ronan of the Regellian Fleet. In the name of our people, I bid you welcome to break your journey and refresh yourself.
How does that thing fly, Weepo?
I don't care, Pogu, as long as it doesn't eat Regellians.
So they're showing him a little bit of hospitality here, leading him to quarters and so forth. They lead him to one of the staterooms, and they say,
So now you are exiled to roam the stars? A simply fantastic tale. We must make it an addition to our recorder library tapes. Perhaps you would even consider continuing your journey with us?
Alas, no. In truth, I long for the ebullient madness of wine and song to soothe my troubled brow. Thy people have no use for such pursuits.
I fear you are correct. We exist only to learn, document, and colonize. Our ways differ greatly from yours. No matter. Consider my quarters your own. We shall bid you farewell after you have completed your sleep mode.
And he sits on the bunk and breaks it out of the wall with a crunch. And he realizes after being in there for a few minutes that he is bored again. And he ends up back in the docking bay. It says 6.4 hours later, so I guess they're expecting him to have slept.
So, thine officer did attempt to feed my steeds?
He's asking.
No need for concern. Our surgical staff informs us that the arm can be easily reattached. But on to other matters. We would like to grant us a request.
A request? You may voice thy petition.
This is a recorder unit. Its function is to analyze and store all information within its scanning range. We would like it to accompany you, to record your journey for our databanks. With your permission, of course.
And we see the recorder, and it's very similar to the recorder that was following Thor around for a while.
I accept thy offer. Thou art in the charge of Hercules from this moment forth. What say thee, friend recorder?
Observation. I believe that your bodily contact is rattling my chips, sir.
So the recorder gets into the chariot with Hercules, and they prepare to leave. And people are whispering in the background.
I told you those beasts ate Regellians, Pogu.
Weepo, just be quiet and keep waving.
May the fates smile upon thee, sons of Rigel.
And they go flying out of the ship, and the recorder is asking, Interrogative, sir, what allows us to exist in this craft without life support?
Why, 'tis the will of Zeus, what else?
Conclusion, of course. And the two of them are flying through space, and they find themselves reaching the planet Patoko. Guided by the laser pulse runways that stretch to the outer atmosphere itself, the Olympian flies into the heart of Star Harbor, glittering port to 100,000 vessels from faraway worlds. And the whole place looks very Star Warsian. Lots of very Star Warsian-looking ships around. They kind of not really Millennium Falcon-looking, but kind of, generic sci-fi kind of Star Wars things. And all these weird, generic, futuristic skyscrapers. Like something you'd see in like a futuristic Metropolis in the Legion of Superheroes. And it says here that they landed without an event. And Hercules warns the hangar crew about the horses. The little gag here where the Hercules is saying,
What did you say, small one?
You heard me, Muscles. Which end of these things do I stick this fuel hose into?
And that's the kind of little moments that this story has that it's hard to to keep up with. And the two of them go wandering around the streets, and we see all kinds of alien beings and so forth.
Mayhap I should have issued a sterner warning. They be beasts of great power, not to be handled by mere mortals.
Interrogative. The will of Zeus, correct?
Of course.
And so Hercules is looking around. He's looking for a good time here.
At last to enjoy the sounds of merriment and adoration of the fairer sex.
Interrogative. What is fairer sex?
Women! Civilizations fall, fortunes are lost, armies are conquered all for the touch of their delicate hands.
And they start going into some sort of a club thing.
Interrogative, perhaps I should wait outside.
Nonsense, pleasures await us within yonder inn. Enter thee.
And there's an alien here, sort of a weird frog-like alien. And he says something like, Spako ja kumnik? And it's like a giant restaurant nightclub sort of thing. And the caption says, The mood is festive, the conversation lively, the gambling fast and furious. Typical for a night at the Stargate Hotel. Oh my, it's a Stargate Hotel. and there's people gambling, and there's a bar, and the bartender is a robot, and he's saying, all right, who ordered the fungus daiquiri? And there's just a lot of little things going on all around.
Innkeeper, Hercules would grace thine establishment with his presence this night. No need to fuss. Thy royal suite shall suffice.
I'm sorry, sir. I haven't a reservation for anyone by that name in my databank.
Statement. Allow me, sir, says the recorder. And the recorder makes a declaration in some weird language. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. And gets a response from the robot at the front desk, robot concierge. And they end up in room 217 and end up back down to the club.
I understand not, friend recorder. How didst thou obtain our lodgings?
Statement. I simply informed the unit that you were an ambassador of the Regellian Empire and to charge all expenses to them.
If that be the case, let us peruse this establishment's bill of fare.
And there's a waitress, and she's kind of, I don't know, not a very imaginative alien. She's got kind of like Batman hair, Wolverine hair. and she's like,
what'll it be, handsome?
A flagon of thy best ale, fair one.
And what of you, recorder? And recorder is looking at a something like a wine list. Statement. I believe my fluid systems will imbibe a Borillian gear slipper, 30 weight, please. And we shift scenes to about 3,500 miles from the Stargate Hotel. The luxury starliner, the Pedalo Crest, begins its approach to Star Harbor, silently speeding down a runway of low-intensity light pulses. Its crew prepares to conclude another routine flight. And there's various aliens and so forth on the ship. And the pilots are talking to, apparently, the control tower, whatever passes for a control tower on this planet.
Affirmative, PO-215. You have clearance on landing bay 27.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Bauer. In a few moments, we will be landing on the planet Patoko. Extinguish all smoking materials and please remain seated until we conclude re-entry. Visibility is excellent, and we expect no trouble.
And right when he says that, there's a giant frack croom as one of the engines of the spacecraft explodes. And the co-pilot's like, holy blowack! Port heat shield just ruptured.
Quick, notify Central. Tell them we're coming in hot. Then get on that intercom. We don't want the passengers to panic.
And we see, of course, in the cabin, the passengers are panicking because they've seen the engine explode.
Oh, lords, help us. We're all going to die. Eek!
Too late, Captain.
And the ship is coming in for a landing. And we have a few more ads. We got Marvel House ad for subscriptions, and we get the usual, you know, X-ray specs kind of stuff. And we shift back to the restaurant where Hercules is showing off for the crowd, and he's telling stories and entertaining people.
And then I dispatched the creature with but a single blow of my mighty arm.
What strength you must possess!
This is the waitress.
Aye, fair one, but Hercules is well versed in the gentler arts as well.
And one of the other people is like thinking, now there's a line if I ever heard one. And the recorder looks like he's drunk. He's like, statement,
why do my sensors feel like twin iron engines?
Methinks thou hast partaken a bit too much. Yon exotic oil is affecting thy speech, friend recorder.
Interrogative, I think. Tink dish fluidish overloading my lubrication system.
And he gets up and starts going away.
But where art thou going?
Statement, where is the facilities? I believe I'm about to spling a leak.
And he goes off towards the bathrooms, of course, because, you know, this is the only Marvel comic that has bathrooms in it. And there's a door marked male, door marked female. And there's a door marked cybernetic bipeds. And somebody's coming out of the men's room and he's thinking,
boy, you can't take those cybernetic bipeds anywhere.
And back in the lounge, we see Hercules and this giant blue guy comes in. And he's just this huge, like monstrous, you know, blue and green, purple dude. And Hercules notices him. He's like,
what in Hera's name is that?
And the waitress is like,
That is a Farragut, Prince. They come from Adago 7, a heavy gravity world. Their dense molecular structure makes them the strongest creatures in the galaxy.
Strongest creature in the galaxy? What joy leaps into my noble heart! At long last I found one sturdy enough to receive the gift!
No, no, wait, you don't understand!
Zeus has smiled upon thee this day, large one. Thou shalt pit thy power against the Lion of Olympus.
What is this you are saying?
And Hercules just lays into him, just strikes him with a kerwomp crash, knocks him down.
Hercules doth exclaim, have at thee!
And knocks him down. But things don't go according to Hercules' plan, because not only does this alien not fight back, the Farragut, he actually sits there and starts to cry.
Ouch! Boo-hoo, why did you hit me?
And Hercules is like, what is this?
What did I do to make you hate me?
And the crowd now is turning on Hercules. The waitress is like, how could you? These are the kindest, gentlest beings in the universe.
You dirty... somebody's saying. Oh, I did not know. I sought only amusement. I pray thee, fly it up your exhaust port, buddy.
Yeah, and the ship you rode in on.
Go on. Just leave this poor creature in peace, you bully.
Hercules is kind of walking off ashamed, and the quarter turns up again. Interrogative. Did I miss something?
Aye, methinks mine exile doth have some justification. I thought not of yon Farragut. Only myself and the adoration of those around.
And he's, just as he says that, an alarm goes off, and it says, Ree-oo!
Hold! What doth this clarion call signify? Someone explain!
And there's like this beetle guy, and he's like, run for the shelters. And Hercules grabs a hold of this sort of frog-looking alien, except it's a different kind of frog-looking alien than the one we saw earlier.
You, green one, why doth everyone flee thus?
It's a disaster warning. It means a starship is crash-landing. We could all go up in flames.
I say thee nay. The fates have decreed that Hercules shall save the day.
And he's running off out of the lounge, and he sees this ship, and it's crashed in the middle of the road. And there's fire department ships there. They're trying to put out the fire, but there's all these explosions going on, like the engines are blowing up. And Hercules is like, by the gods. And I guess there's the fire people there.
Get that number 4 tanker into position. We've got to get those people out before this thing blows.
And Hercules is kind of rushing towards the ship to rescue the people.
Hey, Vadlak, stay back. This area could go Nova any second now.
Then there's no time to tarry. Those within yonder craft are in the need of the son of Zeus.
Look, fella, we'll lose this entire area unless... Hey, where are you going?
To the rescue, of course.
And Hercules jumps into the ship, and he picks it up. Lifts it over his head with both hands. He's trying to reach the passenger section, and the passengers are still like belted in their seats. And they're like, "We're moving. What's happening?" And the alien fire people are like, "By the Great Nebula!" And he detaches the main part of the ship from the burning engines. And he carries it off to safety. The fire people are like, nice try, buddy. But when that fuel tank blows, we're all going to get fried. And they explain to him that the ship was fueled by highly explosive Oxy-17 compound. It's also like an acne medication.
When the storage tank on a ship that size ruptures, it leaves a hole the size of a small moon.
Then the Prince of Power must make haste if any are to survive.
And he starts pulling the towing cables out of the wreckage, and he kind of slings them over his shoulder. And they're like,
huh? Why are you pulling the towing cable out of the wreck for?
And the recorder tells Hercules, observation, by my calculations, there is 39.46 seconds before the main tank erupts.
I pray then that be time enough, says Hercules.
And he goes off and he wraps the engines of the ship up in this cord. And he starts to pull the cables taut, and he starts to lift them off the ground while as they're burning, and he starts swinging them around his head, and trying to really impressive, just swinging them around. And he takes the entire engine and just flings it out into space, away from the city. And we get a little bit of exposition here. Like an ancient Greek athlete throwing the hammer, Hercules swings the blazing vessel around at unbelievable speed. And with a powerful toss, he releases the cable, setting the Pedello crest on her final voyage. Miles above the planet's surface, and it is miles above, and it explodes with a crack-a-boom. The thunderous sound of the explosion fades as the cheers of the adoring throng swell. And within the pride-filled heart of the son of Zeus, their acknowledgement signifies forgiveness. And it's interesting to look at the various crowd scenes. Now, most of these guys are just almost generic-looking humans, but you can see in here, you know, various different aliens, and it looks like C-3PO in one of the pictures, and this is definitely ROG 2000, the John Byrne character, and a guy that looks like one of the tiger people from Commandy. Yeah. So Bob Layton is putting in all these little characters and stuff in. We then shift scenes back to the lounge at a later date. Hercules on the recorder, sitting back at the table again. Apparently, yeah, the crisis has passed. There's these other guys that are kind of walking through the bar.
So I tells her, Morby, I tells, pack up your moogies and go. What did she do then, Latooks?
Har, she kicks me right in the...
And the alien bumps Hercules from behind, and causing Hercules to spill his drink.
Oops, sorry, matey.
And Hercules, he jumps up, he's all pissed off.
You dare accost the son of Zeus? You shall pay for your impudence, large one.
Looks, mate, I'd be sorry. It was an accident.
Thou shalt learn a valuable lesson this day. The Prince of Power is about to bestow upon thee the gift. Stand thy ground and have it,
He thinks better, but it's like, nay. And the alien is thinking, what be all that about? Next issue, Herc gets a job, and the recorder gets busted in For the Love of Gods. And that is Hercules, Prince of Power, number one. And we will have, of course, a few things to say about the issue, as we always do, right after this.
Hey, Kids Comics!
Hey, Michael!
Yeah?
We need to do a new promo.
A new one?
A new one.
Why?
Because we've moved.
Moved?
Moved. We've moved to a new place. We still read comics.
We do. We still talk about comics.
Because you can't do a comic book podcast unless you read and talk about comics, because that's kind of stupid. But now, we have a new episode still available every Thursday, but at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Hey Kids Comics!
So remember, Hey Kids Comics has moved to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Still, every Thursday. That'll do, won't it?
And we are back, and of course we do have a few things to say about this issue, maybe more than what we've had to say about the last few issues that we've covered. You know, this is just, to me, the epitome of a good, solid comic book story. It's not exactly a one-and-done, but we don't have a lot of dangling plot threads. We have an introduction to our character and his new circumstance. You know, we have this set in an indefinite future where we don't even know how long it's been. We don't know how long Hercules has been on Earth. We have no idea. We just kind of generally get the idea that it's a long way in the future from when Hercules is appearing in the Avengers and other titles. Though, we really don't get a good, solid time frame on this. It's easy to look at this and say, oh, yeah, you know, sort of the semi-humorous sci-fi thing. It's been done before, you know, anywhere, you know, up to the Guardians of the Galaxy. But this, in a lot of ways, blazed that trail. We didn't have this kind of a series before Hercules, Prince of Power. And I think you can say that, you know, Bob Layton has a lot to be proud of here. The artwork throughout is just amazing. I mean, it's really, really good stuff. We've got Hercules looking very much like he did in his first appearances. There's, you know, a lot of really nice use of Zipitone, and the inking is really good. We've got, you know, Bob Layton basically at the height of his powers. Clearly, this is a project of passion for Bob Layton. You know, the writing and the art work really well together. And the way that it does when you've got a writer-artist who's actually doing both, and obviously very much in sync. I like the fact that we have a lot of little things going on in the background. The attention to detail, like, you know, again, you know, it's impossible to cover it all on the show. I mean, you could kind of pour over these issues for a long time. You know, we have these crowd scenes and all these little things going on, and you know, and this gets more and more as the time goes on. I mean, there's a scene in the Regellian ship, and this is back over on page 9. Where they appear to be playing a game something like Pong on the screen when they discover Hercules. There's definitely Star Wars influences all over the place on this. The way the doors are drawn very much harkens back to the original Star Wars trilogy. And again, on page 13, where they're landing on the planet, the ships again, they look very, very influenced by Star Wars. Not only Star Wars, but, you know, like Space 1999 and things like that. I think they very deliberately try to move away from a Star Trek looking thing. And definitely the kind of ships that have all these little, you know, noodly bits on them and things like that. I mean, as opposed to the rather sleeker, you know, Star Trek Lost in Space, Flash Gordon kind of ships. They're definitely influenced by Star Wars. The gag with Hercules' horses, you know, this sounds really familiar, doesn't it? Yeah. Actually, we've seen this before. We saw it in Thor. Walt Simonson used almost the same exact gag regarding Thor's goats back in the Thor frog story. So, you know, these little jokes, I mean, they end up getting reused and recycled. That's good stuff. I mean, it's no wonder that other comic artists are going to borrow this stuff. In the bar, you have, you know, people, they're obviously playing poker. You have, you know, the who ordered the fungus daiquiri thing. You know, one of the other aliens is insulting, oh, yeah, your maternal unit. We have somebody, you know, singing like a pseudo Frank Sinatra song, I Get No Kick from Quadrifemoral. You know, there's just a lot of interesting little details and things in this issue that make it a lot of fun. And of course, I'll be looking forward to continuing on with the series as we go. And of course, yeah, like we say, March is going to be, all 4 weeks of March are going to be covering this series. All right, and that is about time to wrap it up for this week. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this little change of pace here as we cover Hercules, Prince of Power. And of course, if you want to email the show, feel free to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also join us over on Facebook. And with that, I am climbing off my couch in Olympus because Hercules got kicked out, and sliding down Mount Olympus back to Midgard, or Earth as they call it. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, The Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.